I have some experience. I was not alive during the 1972 Miami Dolphins perfect season.
It's certainly older than, I'm older than I ever thought I was going to get. Yeah. In my mid-30s, much to my chagrin, I realized that I actually enjoyed helping people. Three of the greatest words in the English language that don't get used often enough are, I don't know. No sin not to know, but it is a sin to not know and to lead people to believe that you're something that you aren't. I like Popeye. I am what I am, and that's all that I am. And it's got to be a good I am.
Igniting, inspiring, and evoking the fire within. You're listening to the What's Your Inspiration Podcast with Fox Beyer.
Hello, everybody. And today, as you'll hear, we have Ross Griswold on the podcast. Among many things, Ross is a singer and musician. And this is Ross doing his song, Box Wine. I hope you enjoy.
Stuff was gone. Guess it means you're moving on. Of course I could be sad, but then baby, you weren't my only friend.
Hello and welcome to episode number 10 of the What's Your Inspiration podcast. Today I have a good friend on. He is Ross Griswold. He's a singer and guitarist who lives in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and is very close to finishing a Master's of Social Work from Rutgers University in New Brunswick. Ross, how are you today?
I'm doing well, man, and thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be up here doing this.
You are highly recommended by many, many of my previous guests. To let you know, we are in the midst of a hanging koala and a yoga-posing frog here, Ross. If you're trapped in a foxhole, would you go with a yoga-posing frog or a hanging koala?
I don't know, but I feel like those are probably going to be our nicknames from now on. And I blame you for that fully.
Well, if you listened to a previous podcast, actually my first podcast I did with Stuart Lake, he told a story about me and him living in Edenton, North Carolina in the year 2000, and we're coaching together, and we're living with a house mother named Ruth, sweet lady in her 70s at the time, and I would frequently go to a beach to read before games. And one day I was at this beach, and Stuart got home and asked Ruth, where is he? And she said, well, Frog is at the beach. She thought my name was Frog. I still can't believe that. So you're probably the koala, and I'm the frog.
I'll take it.
Is that solid?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to get a bit more serious, in some previous questioning, Ross, you wrote to me quite a bit about the importance of perspective, persistence, and observation. Again, perspective, persistence, and observation. How important have they been in your pursuing of master's in social work from Rutgers, and where would you rank them in order?
Oh, man. Ranking them in order is tough. I think they each play in very different ways. I guess I would put perspective first, because really the way you choose to look at things often makes it easier to, keep moving forward with something when it's difficult. If you can find value in it, then it makes it makes it easier to find motivation to keep working at something despite how challenging it is. So I guess I would put perspective first. And I guess persistence after that, because there's a lot you can get done when you just stick with things. And I think one of the best lessons I learned from that was when I was up at Hamilton College for undergrad, because that my junior year first semester, I had 4 final exams, 3 papers, a research project, multiple presentations and classes all within 1 week. And I was working on it the week before and pulling my hair out and crying and thought I was never going to get it done. And then I finished it, and I've looked back on it multiple times since then and just kind of realized that sometimes you need to get pushed way beyond what you think you're capable of to realize what you actually are capable of, and I've leaned on that experience several times during school when I'm, trying to keep up with classes and trying to keep up with the band and, trying to keep up with all of the other things that are going on in my life and, realizing that I'm not doing a stellar job on any of them, but that if I at least keep moving, I'll probably do okay and get through it and get to a place where I can, once I finish something, I can find a little bit better balance. And I'm certainly looking forward to May 15th because school's done then, and I can actually have a little more control over my time at that point.
Gotcha. Now going back to your time at Hamilton College and those final exams, I mean, who the heck put the syllabus together? I drink that in for a second, people. You had what in your last week?
It was in 4 classes. I think I had an exam in each class. I had probably 3 papers, had a big research project to do for one of them, had at least 1 presentation, possibly 2. It was just, it was kind of madness.
Did you put it off, or was it actually assigned that week?
That's the question. Probably some combination of both. some of the projects I'm sure were given out well enough ahead of time that had I prioritized them, over going out and spending time with my friends and, a variety of other nonsense, I probably would have had a much easier time, but I didn't. And then I was stuck in that position of holy, I have a whole lot to do and don't really think I'm going to be able to get this done. But
You were persistent and you did.
Right.
And you did. Now, what about observation? I mean, how important is that? Thinking about you pursuing your master's in social work, how important is that when you talk to people or when you pursue your own degree?
It's important on 2 fronts to me. One is, observation of others, especially other people who are, doing the things you want to do and doing them better, or are further along than you are. I've picked up a lot just from watching you know, professors, supervisors, coworkers, even other students who are, you know, doing things better than I am in, you know, several different areas, and being able to watch them and pick up on some of their habits and why, find out why they're succeeding has been helpful to me to kind of, you know, improve my own, practices, I guess, and figure out just what I can be doing better that I'm not yet. And then the other half of the observation coin, I guess, is, just self-observation and trying to learn more about myself and how I operate and, the positives and, also the negatives and the kind of the dark spots that you don't really like dealing with on a regular basis. And I have tended not to acknowledge for long periods of time because I just didn't want them to be there, but, they are. And this program has actually been, really helpful in that they focus heavily on you exploring yourself and, getting to know yourself and your own issues and struggles, for your own benefit. And also because, you know, as a therapist, you need to know what's tough for you and what you're bringing into the room, because it's going to influence how you treat your clients, and how the things they say and the, you know, even their mannerisms or who they remind you of, how all of that can affect you. And you need to be tuned into that before you can be effective, and especially with a broad range of clients.
Sure. You need to know yourself,
right,
before you get to know your clients. That makes a lot of sense to me. Exciting time for you. I mean, you know, I met you years ago out playing at a local place called the Myersville Inn, and to see you go through that process and really make music your life and then jump right into this. I mean, you're doing yeoman's work from both perspectives. I mean, a lot of people couldn't handle what you're doing just from the academic side, and what you do from the music side is also amazing. So May 15th, you will be on top of the world.
Yeah,
on top
absolutely.
Of the world. Is it May 15th?
Yep.
Oh, mm-hmm. Outstanding. How long have you known that date for?
Not as long as I should. My parents were asking about coming up for graduation, and that's what finally got me to find what the date was and send them some info. So they're coming up for that, which will be a lot of fun. And actually, our band is going to be playing out at Beneduce Vineyards in Pittstown that weekend. Graduation's on a Monday. We'll be out at Beneduce on Saturday, May 13th. And so that should be a good time.
One day of rest and take a walk.
Yeah, exactly. Take and a walk. The one day of rest is Mother's Day. So we'll be going out.
But no day of rest.
Yeah, it'll be nice. It'll be good to see them.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding. Awesome start. I had asked those questions because in a previous podcast, I had a former student of mine, Lauren Knapp, and she's pursuing a master's in social work, and she really talked a lot about the power of observation and suggestion. And in a previous podcast as well, Barney Kramer talked about how he valued so much persistence, the value of persistence. And just from you talking, I'm thinking about, you talked about the darker sides of you and not wanting to analyze those things. And I had my brother Nick on an earlier podcast, and he puts it like this: simply analyze your failures.
Mm-hmm.
Analyze your failures. I think we all have to do that in life.
Yeah.
Another little quote from what you just said that makes me think of this. Fred Jordan, former coach at the Citadel, said, if you're not evaluating what you're doing, you need to evaluate why you're not evaluating what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you're on the right track,
and
for sure.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's become pretty clear to me why I wasn't. I was, you know, I was kind of getting my self-confidence at the time from this image of who I thought I was or who I wanted to be, and wasn't willing to deal with the parts of myself that didn't line up with that. And I haven't really enjoyed dealing with those parts, but they exist, and they're not going to change if I don't acknowledge them and actively try to deal with them.
That's right. Acknowledge that they're there and try to adjust, monitor and adjust.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's all a process. That's what life is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we started off with some social work, getting into that, getting into your master's, and now Ross Griswold, the musician. I've seen you out a bunch. We've built a friendship through just me coming to hear you and watch you play a couple times a week. And a while back, if you remember, we were discussing a documentary called 20 Feet to Stardom.
Yep.
Okay. And it's about, it really to me depicts how close yet how far away some backup musicians are to leads.
Sure.
As a guitarist, a musician, give people a sense of the difference between a backup and a lead role.
Well, as someone who's doing more of the lead role, I'm not a lead guitarist by any means. I can't play a solo for my life.
He's humble, people. He's very humble.
I'm content to be a rhythm player, but I do in solo gigs, I do all my singing and singing for the band I'm in right now, and that's been an adjustment. The first band I was ever in was called Root Glen, which after we named it and did a few shows, we unfortunately realized that none of us could pronounce or intelligibly over a microphone. So we'd be like, "Yeah, we're Root Glen," and people were like, "Rufalin." Root canal.
What they got?
Yeah, so that didn't work. Naming didn't work out too well, but the band was a blast, and I bring it up because I was the rhythm guitarist in that, and I was mainly like a backup singer. Eventually, we started doing some more covers, and I sang a good number of those. But our lead singer Dave Maroney handled all the lead vocals, and he's got a fantastic voice. He and I actually, we got to sing together May of last year at a fundraiser for the Raptor Trust, and we did Under Pressure. And he, as he always does, he totally blew it out of the water. Like, he can hit all the same notes that, that Freddie hits in that song. And we used to do a bunch of Michael Jackson with the band, and he'd just kill it.
Wow.
And it was, in so many senses, it was really nice to be on stage and part of the band, but not be the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it allowed me to, I don't feel like he has what seems to be, or what seems to me a naturally, like a natural stage persona. You know, he gets on stage, he does things, people love it, people look at him, he's a show, kind of in and of himself in addition to his singing. And I don't feel that way about myself. I'm kind of teaching myself to be a little more entertaining, I guess, on stage, but I don't feel like it's my default, I guess. So in a lot of ways, it's easier and more relaxing for me to kind of be a sideman, in a band rather than being the lead. But I've found out that I can apparently sing, and as a result...
Not just apparently, Ross.
I've been doing... I've been doing solo shows, so with those and with the band, I'm kind of in more of a central role, and I'm still adjusting to that. It's not my comfort zone by any means, but I'm learning. And again, kind of back to the observation, there's a few other people that I've watched, lead a band, and I'm trying to pick up some of the stuff they do. Like, I went down to Delta's in New Brunswick a couple weeks ago to see Vin Mott, who's a fantastic drummer. He plays for Bob Lanz's blues band. But then he also started up his own band where he's playing harmonica and singing, and I was just kind of watching a lot of the cues he gives to the band for when he's, when he's about to stop something or when he wants them to bring the volume down and stuff like that. And then Yolanda Briggs is another one. She was in Supreme Court with Big Nancy, and she gets on stage and takes control of the band, and that's it's a skill that I'm definitely still working on.
Mm-hmm. When did you start performing?
So Root Glen started, I think, we had our first show in May of 2010. And I think I had played one song live in like a bar before, which was with Alex Linton up at the little pub on the Hamilton campus.
Okay.
And we played a Dispatch song, and I struggled my way through it. So playing with Dave and Eric and Andre and Root Glen was the first time I ever played on stage. And It was a blast. It was incredibly nerve-wracking. Like, I used to, you know, I'd be so nervous that I'd squeeze the guitar, you know, till my hand would cramp, and you know, and then like I would same thing with the pick, and then eventually my, you know, my right hand, my picking hand would cramp up, and like I'd drop the pick, and like I'd just be like hitting the strings with like the side of my hand to make them make noise.
Next thing you know, your hand's bleeding.
Oh yeah, I did. I bled on my guitar a bunch of times. And not, you know, not in like a cool metal way, more just like, I'm so nervous that I'm, you know, squeezing the hell out of this.
Well, I mean, you'd never know it. Now, I met you, I would say, let's say 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So you weren't all that far into your career as I know it. And if that's 5, 6 years ago, that's 2012, that's 2 years into Root Glen. Where'd you get the name Root Glen from?
So it's an arboretum on the Hamilton College campus.
Okay.
And Dave, the lead singer, and I both went to school there. And we had a song called Dieting Bears, which was probably one of the more ridiculous songs ever written. So we wrote that kind of by accident up there during this Adirondack Adventure program that we both used to lead. And, you know, the four of us had been arguing about a band name for, you know, a couple of weeks because we wanted to pick the perfect one. And like, we eventually settled on that because like, it didn't really have any, it was kind of interesting, but didn't really have any like other connotation, you know, so it was kind of neutral. But yeah, we didn't account for the fact that no one could pronounce it over the microphone and have people understand it.
So is it Rootland or Rootland?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That didn't work out too well.
Well, those things happen in life, and then you go back to my name, Fox. I mean, I've ordered pizza and I get the order back, the pizza box back, and there's a name on the box. It's spelled F-O-C-K-S. So many things get lost in translation. Yeah. Not to worry. Ross, that's a great history of your career as I've known it. The song Dieting Bear, I mean, that's a song that I've left eateries and bars singing after you've done it. So it's made its impact for sure. For sure. Dieting Bear. Ross, it is time for a game called What, Which, and Where. Are you ready?
I was not prepared for this, but I'm about to be. Yes.
No one is. All I'm going to do is read you a line. It could be a song lyric. It could be from a book. Could be a quote. And I want you to see if you can tell me from whom, when, or where it came from.
All right.
Here we go. Number one, I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged.
Yeah, Shawshank Redemption. And I have to remind myself that, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, and who was it?
It was Morgan Freeman, but as Ellis Redding, or Red.
As Red. How many times have you watched Shawshank in your life?
Realistically, or what it seems like? It seems like about 100 or more. Realistically, probably in the 20s.
In the 20s. And when was the last time you watched it?
It's been a while. I don't know. It could be. Could be over a year at this point. It could be more than that, which is, you know, was blasphemous to me at one point. But yeah, I've been thinking about it a bunch and like kind of being like, yeah, I should watch that again. It's been a while.
It seems like that is your flick. I mean, you went on and on and on and some questioning before the podcast to me. So I said, you know what? I've got to put that in there. One of the most quoted movies, I think, of all time.
Yeah.
All time.
And I mean, I guess in some ways it comes back to like the persistence and perspective. You know, some people, when they were in there that long, they took it as like, well, this is my death sentence and I'm just going to die here. So I'm not going to try anything, you know, but Andy, you know, in addition to like the library and all that other positive stuff he did there, he's like, okay, well, this gives me a heck of a lot of time to figure out how to get out of here, you know, and he did. And, you know, again, both the persistence and the perspective in that case, you know, are pretty clear.
They are. It reminds me of another story of Dewey Bozell. Dewey Bozella. He was a guy who was wrongly accused of a crime of killing an older woman in the 70s for a crime he didn't commit. And while incarcerated, he gets his graduate degree and pursues a boxing career. And he's acquitted of all of the charges fairly recently, within the last 5 years or so, and at 51 years old, fights his first professional fight, if you can believe it.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's again, a story of persistence. He got married while he was in jail as well. So,
wow.
You know, the story of Red and Andy is not far away from anyone. A great
sure.
story of persistence. Great story. Ross, you are 1-for-1. All right. Here's the next line. And you're standing here beside me. I love the passing of time.
Mm-hmm. Talking Heads from Naive Melody / This Must Be the Place, which is my all-time favorite song, for the music itself, which is fantastic, but also just for the lyrical content, in that I feel like there's an infinite number of songs about love, and like all of them try to describe it, you know, simply or completely, I guess. And I don't feel like this song ever really tries to nail it down in the way others do. I feel like it kind of like almost shoots around it, you know, so you're left with this kind of outline of like somewhere in between all this stuff is what love is, rather than like someone just trying to tell you flat out like, hey, this is what it is, which like I think is total bull. And there's also just the title itself, Naive Melody, and This Must Be the Place. There's a lot of reference to like kind of ambiguity and like, do you ever really know like that this is totally right, you know? And I guess, yeah, it leaves things vague that I think need to be left vague. And I appreciate that about it.
Yeah, I think you acquire your own meaning.
Right.
Through it. I think that's all. I mean, that, to me, as a non-musician, I like the ability for people to make their own meaning out of it. Mm-hmm. And for the band, some of the stuff is just theirs. And I like that about music. I really, really do. That's a song, people, that when I've seen Ross out, and typically was out with my sister, Julie, Ross would be playing and Julie and I would be sitting in the back and we would just stare down Ross and he would say at the end of the set, people, this is an implied request, and then end up playing the song, This Must Be the Place.
Yeah, I guess if you request it from yourself, you know, you kind of have to put that disclaimer out there.
Yes, it was either that song or the song Psycho Killer, where implied request from the audience.
That's a standing request for Steve Bagan and Maura Griffin of the Raccoon Ridge Ramblers.
Yes, yes, for sure. The Ramblers on the What's Your Inspiration podcast. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
2-for-2, Ross. 2-for-2. And number three. I don't think with this one you're going to bounce up out of your chair and go to the mic, but we'll see. And if you do, I'd be surprised. I'd be very surprised. So here we go. As you look out this window and stand here alone, realize this, whichever way you look, it will soon close.
Foxfire.
What does it sound like?
I don't know.
Ross, you are correct. I can't go anywhere with that. What I've done is usually people say it sounds like the Beatles, and I'm
okay.
Like, whoa, okay, which album, which LP, and we go from there. But that is indeed from one of my poems. So
nice.
Just proving that Ross is an avid listener of the What's Your Inspiration podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to fire something from one of my poems or my book in there.
Nice.
That's from a song called The Window.
Okay.
And it's about time and how it goes from endless to relentless.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's just it. Ross, you are 3-for-3. You could take home the hanging koala if you'd like.
Nice. Yeah, he popped me in the face before when I was setting my stuff up. So we have a bit of a score to settle.
Yes, we do have sound of that. So maybe you'll hear it on when this is posted. Ross, outstanding, and we're going to end with this. You wrote to me, and I'll say this to you. All heroes do not wear a cape. You mentioned to me people that you admire. Your parents, Andy Dufresne from Shawshank, and Walker, an ex-lacrosse player of yours with partial CP. If you could only choose one, who would you right now take a three-hour car ride with, and why?
I don't know, because the reasons are different for each. Thankfully, I get to see my parents on a semi-regular basis, you know, and we have some good talks. So, no offense to you guys, because I love you, but you're not getting this one. I don't know.
It's between Walker, and Andy.
I almost feel like with Andy, I've gotten what I was supposed to get, you know, from seeing him.
Heck, you've watched the movie 100,000 times, so it feels like you may take it a ride with him already.
Yeah, right. That movie's like 3 hours long too, so I've probably gotten my 3 hour thing in, you know, 27 times already with him. So I think I'd pick Walker. And you know, I mentioned in I forget exactly what I put in that in like the notes, but he's always impressed me as someone who, you know, who was not willing to slow down because of his disability. Like, he didn't really have much use of one of his hands, so he learned. I taught computer classes up at this boarding school where he was a student, and you know, while the rest of everyone else was doing Mavis Beacon with two hands, you know, I think he found a program that taught one-handed typing and just did that right alongside everyone. And you know, I think he was the captain of the squash team, you know, and not out of anything other than he was the best player on the team, because even though you know, one of his ankles wasn't as functional as the other one, he understood the strategy of the game, you know, miles better than anyone else. And you know, with two or three of the right steps, he'd always be where he needed to be, you know, and he had a fantastic shot. And so he could, you know, he could compensate for and overcome, you know, the stuff he was dealing with, because he learned how to, and he chose to, you know. And I think that again shows both the, you know, the value of both perspective and persistence, because it was really a choice to not, you know, not allow himself to be limited. And you know, he chose to take the paths of, you know, I'm going to play to my strengths, and I'm going to develop them to the point where they, you know, compensate for the things that I'm dealing with. And he did. And, you know, I watched him, I was the JV lacrosse coach up there, and he decided to learn how to play lacrosse. So we worked together a bunch of times, you know, outside of practice, and he learned to play one-handed. And, you know, so he just kind of, he was an attackman, and he'd hold the stick kind of in the middle, whereas most people put one hand at the bottom and one kind of halfway up. So yeah, he learned to catch and throw and cradle one-handed, and we made him a crease attackman because, again, he understood the spacing, and he scored one game and everyone went nuts, you know. And he, like, there were a couple games where he just got crushed and pretty much crawled off the field. And then later on, he was ready to go back in, and, you know, it was another good example of kind of persistence and perspective. You know, he was willing to work through that stuff and just push himself and choose to get over, you know, or get around rather than be held back by the stuff he was dealing with, you know. And that definitely made an impact on me.
Gotcha. Fair to say that he's been battle tested?
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And we've discussed before, I mean, you're not in constant contact with Walker, but you are friends on Facebook and stay in touch that way.
Right. Yeah. You know, we'll drop each other a line every now and again to just kind of see what's new, but it's been a bit, so I'll have to shoot him another message soon.
Great. So Walker, thank you. You did a lot for Ross, obviously, and for me, because you've tied the podcast back into perspective and persistence, which Ross and I talked about at the beginning. So thank you for your story and your hard work. Ross, it's been outstanding. You've given us great stories about, you know, your music career, your career in social work, just overall personal stories. And to end up here, a couple of things. How can people get in touch with you and talk to us about some upcoming gigs you're involved with?
Sure. So the best way to get in touch is probably on Facebook. I'm on there under Ross Griswold, RossGriswold. And I also have a website, RossGriswold.com. There's a calendar on there with all the gig info. And then got a bunch of gigs coming up that I'm excited about. Most of them are with the band I'm playing with called Ross Griswold in the Second Line. And it's a New Orleans soul and R&B group. My buddy Chris Soucy is on lead guitar. Our keyboard player is named Rob Scorga. He's from Somerville. And we got Rob Burek on drums, who is on drums for the Ross Griswold band a couple of years ago with a few of the other guys from the area. And so we're going to be playing at Rolf's over in Warren on the night of Mardi Gras. That's Tuesday, February 22nd. That Saturday will be, February 28th is Mardi Gras. We'll be at Rolf's. There we go. That Saturday, we're going to be out at Beneduce Vineyards out in Pittstown, and that's from 6 to 9 o'clock on Saturday, March 4th. And then we're going to be back out there again in May for graduation weekend, which I'm looking forward to. And for that show, we're actually going to be joined by this guy, Donald Guillaume, on drums, who was the drummer for the Fugees.
Outstanding.
And he's a good buddy of Robbie's, which is great because our regular drummer, Rob, unfortunately couldn't make it. So Robbie was able to get in touch with Don, and he's helping us out, which should be a blast. And then a couple Sundays after that, on May 21st, we're going to be at the Sterling Hotel doing a fundraiser for the Raptor Trust, which is a rehabilitation center for injured birds of prey. So they take in hawks and falcons and eagles and owls, and if they're injured or sick, and they try to rehabilitate them and re-release them if possible. I think their success rate's about 50%, which is great. And if they can't be re-released, they'll keep some of them in good sized cages where they can get fed and hang out in trees and live out the rest of their days in relative comfort, which is cool. And it's a great place to go visit too. So if you're in the the Morris County area or Somerset County, you should go check them out. They're down on Whitebridge Road in Millington. So again, that's the Raptor Trust.
How long have you worked there?
I was there for maybe a year or a year and a half. I don't totally remember, but I was doing like maintenance stuff and construction, and it was a blast. That was a good time. I kind of miss it. I'm hoping to get back into a little bit of that here and there once I'm not in in school. And what else? We're going to be at Old Bay in June. We're going to be at a place called Maxfield's up in Booton in July. And then we actually just got... Oh, we're going to be at the High Bridge Town Park on August 5th, which is... that should be a fun show. They got a big stage there, and a couple other bands we know are going to be playing, so that should be really fun. And then we'll be at a southern restaurant called Delta's down in New Brunswick in September and December. So it's slightly crazy to think that we have gigs in December already.
You've got a year in advance. We got the mental Rolodex of Ross Griswold. It's expansive. I don't think I could have ever remembered all of that, but you can replay this all you want, people, to get his gigs. He is outstanding.
Or just go to the website. That's how I remember most of them, because they're on there.
Right. Reading it over and over and over again. Ross, thank you very much. One final question. Who would you like to hear on an upcoming podcast?
I'd be interested to see if she'd be willing to do this. There's one of my professors named Jackie Phillips is like the most transformative teacher I've had. She connects with people on an emotional level better than anyone else I've ever met. And I've had her for two classes. I was hoping to take a third one with her this semester, but my elective space is full from the addictions counseling certificate program I'm in. But I went and sat in on it last week anyway. But she's amazing, and anyone who's ever had her just raves about her. She definitely sticks and makes an impact. And I would be very interested to hear what she would what she'd talk about if she were on here. So. Maybe we can set that up.
Hopefully that can be arranged. That would be great.
That'd be great.
Jackie Phillips. Okay, I have her name down here, and we'll We'll see if we can't make that happen.
Sure. Okay.
Ross, thank you very much. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
That will wrap up episode number 10 of the What's Your Inspiration podcast. Ross and I will talk at you all later. Take good care.
You have been listening to the What's Your Inspiration podcast with Fox Buyer. Because impact on each other is the greatest currency you could ever have.
The window. As you rise, you unwrap another chance. A time again to adapt and advance. The sun rises and you are prepared. No, you can't erase your past and erase the unfair. You open the window, look above and below. A voice in your head says, less show and more go. But the trees, the grass, and the light are anything but lame. So you decide to play the waiting game. What lies out the window gives you a thrill. So as you look outside while standing still, looking out this window was not your original intention, but it gives you such a profound present. Attracted by the blue sky and the green grass, as seconds, minutes, and hours pass, as you sit here and look out alone, realize this, whichever way you look, the window will soon close.